the Jeep Grand Cherokee. It's the most awarded SUV ever and raises the bar on intelligent design with its powerful mix of luxury, comfort, and world-class ride and handling. Jeep Grand Cherokee. It goes above and beyond every type of road.
This is SB Nation Radio,
the next generation of sports radio.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have.
This is SB Nation AM, coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios. Quicken Loans, take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today. Sitting in on SB Nation AM, here's Ken Weinman.
Good morning. Hope you're enjoying your Tuesday, getting yourself ready for the weekend and New Year's Eve. And this is the last week of 2016. Can you believe this? The year's almost over? It feels like just yesterday the Olympics were going on, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
And that Ryan Lochte getting in trouble at the gas station. And here we are. We have less than a week to go in 2016, right? It's just it's crazy. But still some big events to happen in sports, as college basketball going on right now, college football going on right now, the playoffs are New Year's Eve, and it's good to know that this is the last year they'll be played on New Year's Eve. That was another stupid college football decision. I'm also awaiting the decision by college football to expand the playoff, which I think is something that's going to happen, and I'm in favor of that. Chris, do you like an expanded playoff?
I do. I mean, I think four teams is not enough. I mean, you got to have a realistic playoff now.
Well, the question becomes, and granted, they have a playoff in every level of football except for Division One,
right.
And now they have the four teamer. You have to, if you go to eight or at some point go bigger, they're going to have to reduce the regular season. You can't have these college kids playing 16 games, can you?
I mean, why not? They all want to go pro early anyway. Why not?
I know, but they're not all NFL caliber players, even if some of them think they are. And that's too long a season, I would think, but we shall see. I know it's more money for the universities. As the money keeps getting bigger and bigger, it just becomes more of an inequitable situation, because I've been done with the, well, they get a free education. Meanwhile, guys are making the schools, the television networks, the presidents, the coaches, everybody's making millions upon millions of dollars. And the player, who everybody's making the money off the backs of, gets his free room and board and books and school. That's all they get. Now, back in the day before the money exploded, that was fair. You get a free education. And we play football, and yada yada. You help the school. We make some money off this. Whatever, you fill the stadium. But since television money got out of control, and since salaries got out of control, like, it's amateur athletics. But Nick Saban makes what, $9 million a year? And you know, people complain about players leaving because they worry about the draft status. But coaches can leave all the time. Coaches can walk. Tom Herman, Matt Rhule, they left. They left their guys. They had bowl games to play. They're allowed to leave. Nobody complains. Christian McCaffrey, Leonard Fournette, they don't want to play. Oh, they're ruining the fabric of college football. It's about a brotherhood. Well, what about the money that everybody's making on their backs and they get nothing? I don't know how you would do it, but you know, there should be like a trust put together for college athletes. And what if a guy tears up his what if he's not good enough? He plays 4 years of major college football. He's not good enough to play at the next level, and he has ravaged his body playing at that high level of college football. Who takes care of his medical bills once he's done?
Him.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for the memories.
Right, so, and the thing is, it's easy to say from the outside, you know, oh, the guy should be playing. Oh, they're getting a free education. But, you know, it's hard when it's you and you walk in the stores and your jersey is in the store, or you have your number or your face on a T-shirt and everybody else is getting money but you. I mean, come on now. Let's just be realistic here.
Yeah, it's not an equitable situation, in my opinion. You look at it, and millions upon millions of dollars are being made on the backs of these kids. It's basically indentured servitude. Yeah, you get what you get, because we're giving it to you, and we're going to take everything else. Right. We get the whole pie, and you guys split this slice.
Right. SB Nation Radio, Ken Wyman. We're going to sell Ken Wyman shirts, and we're going to profit off of it. You're not getting anything. You take a regular salary, and you better not say anything else, okay?
Because you're getting a salary. It's not even a regular. Hey, the players don't get a salary. They get a free education. We're going to give you, and some of them, you know, let's face it, some of the kids don't want the education. And hopefully, hopefully they take advantage of it. And some of the schools know the kids don't want it and just do what they can to keep them eligible. So I saw a Real Sports piece a while back. Kid basically graduated offensive lineman in Oklahoma. Graduated basically with a degree in football. He had some degree, but he couldn't get hired with it afterwards. And it's like, you graduated from Oklahoma, but he has no skill. And all they wanted to do was keep him eligible. Because in this day and age, if your guys fail out and Connecticut a couple years ago missed a tournament because they didn't maintain that low GPA. If you're a football team, if you're a basketball team that does that, you're screwed. So you got to keep these guys eligible. So if they got to take basket weaving, or you got to get tutors to help them, or allegedly do their work for them, then you'll do it. That's the situation that's going on right now, because there's too much money to be made. There's way too much damn money to be made. I love college football. I love college basketball. I don't think it's fair anymore. I'm glad that Ed O'Bannon had that lawsuit with the NCAA about using their they play college basketball, so we're allowed to use your likeness in a video game, and you don't get any money out of it. That's a joke. We're going to make, not only do we make millions of dollars, millions upon millions of dollars, like the March Madness deal with CBS is like $1 billion. So not only are we pocketing so much money that it's falling out of our pockets and out of our bags, but we're going to make more money here by making a video game. We're going to use your likeness because people love video games and they love thinking they can play with the greats from the past. And so, you know, we're going to use your likeness, and we're allowed to use your likeness because when you signed your agreement with us, it says that we can use your likeness, but you get nothing from that. You get absolutely nothing. And yeah, we can sell your jerseys, but your name isn't on the back of it, so it's not really your jersey. It's just a number. It's just a number. So we'll sell 8 million Johnny Manziel jerseys, and you can come to class. You get this free education.
And listen, and then, you know, with your scholarship check, if you live off campus, it's just like me. You know, I have my scholarship check. You know, you get about, you know, $700-$800 a month, but after you pay
$800 a month,
yeah. After you pay your rent, and I mean, you got three guys living with you. After you pay your rent and you eat, you know, you don't have anything left.
wait, time out. I didn't know you got $800 a month. My whole opinion has changed on this.
No,
$800 a month.
It might have been $650.
Nah, well, let's go. $800 a month. That's 8,000 months. That's $9,600 a year. Oh, come on. I apologize. You get around 10 grand a year, and they're making up hundreds of millions of dollars. That's a fair situation.
Yeah, and like I said, I might be up a little bit. It might be six.
Oh, okay. Well, then you're talking about a little over 7 grand a year.
Right.
Wow. Well, there are a lot of players. So 7 grand times, let's say 30 guys, it's like $200,000, and we're still making hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
It seems like they still come out ahead, I think.
Right. My rent was 900, three guys, you split it three ways, that's 300. So now you have 300 left. You got to eat. You still, you know, you had to pay your bills. You have, you know, $0 left.
Did you have a meal card?
Not if you live off campus, no.
No, you couldn't eat at the school?
But
it's not close.
Right. If you live off campus, we didn't have a meal card. You had a meal card if you lived in the dorms.
But wait a second.
They provided food like at the stadium, like training table. So they provided.
Okay, but like as an athlete, you couldn't come there whenever you want and eat? I guess you could now. Didn't they change that after Shabazz Napier complained?
Right, probably now. But when I was playing, I had to go. When I went to the student union, I had to get my own. I had to pay for my own food.
Really?
Yeah.
But you're a student there.
I'm a student there, but I still had to pay.
That's a joke. You're a scholarship athlete at the University of Indiana, and you have to pay for your food?
Yep. But when I lived in the dorm, I had a meal card. But when I moved off, that was it.
But you still go on campus to go to school.
I know.
You're not going to class off campus.
Right, well, you got to pay for your food. That's why they get you the scholarship money, so you can pay for your food, I guess.
Hey, Ismir, my mind has just been blown.
Now you see why guys get so mad.
Wow.
They don't have
I don't think that's the case anymore, because after Shabazz Napier complained, I think they basically said athletes get unlimited food. I would assume that that goes for off-campus athletes as well. But the fact that happened, that's a joke. Yeah, you get nothing a month, but now you have to pay for your food. Because we can't afford to give you your food. We're only making hundreds of millions of dollars. Oh. You're listening to SB Nation Radio.
SB Nation AM continues now on SB Nation Radio. Sitting in on SB Nation AM, here's Ken Weinman.
Congratulations to Dak Prescott with the Cowboys' victory last night, defeating the Detroit Lions 42-21. The Cowboys went to 13-2. Dak Prescott tied Ben Roethlisberger's record for most wins by a rookie quarterback with 13. So let's move forward. The Cowboys play the Eagles next weekend. If they were to win that game, and Dak Prescott quarterbacks the team, he'd hold the record for wins by a rookie quarterback in a season. I would argue, with nothing to play for, Dak Prescott should not play next week. But neither should Tony Romo. Because all the Cowboys need in this Jerry Jones world is the drama of Tony Romo going out there and playing a great game and people saying, well, look what Tony Romo can do.
But who's the backup? Is it Tony Romo or Mark Sanchez?
It's Tony Romo. But Tony Romo should not. Tony Romo should only come into a game at this point if Dak Prescott gets hurt. Period. End of story.
So you don't feel like he needs some work?
No, he's working during the week.
Okay.
By the way, he's got a paper mache body. I don't want him getting hit, unless he has to get hit. And that's if Dak Prescott gets hurt. Because God forbid you decide to get cute. There's a couple of things. And part of this is because it's the Cowboys. If there's any other team, Tony Romo should play, get some work in, get ready for the playoffs. Because Jerry Jones runs this team, if Tony Romo goes in there and has a great game, then you've got that storyline for 2 weeks. And you get it. I don't want to mess with Dak Prescott's psyche. I don't know how strong he is mentally. Obviously, he's pretty strong. As a rookie, he's playing great, but I don't know how he's going to react to that, and I don't want to know how he's going to react to that. He's the starting quarterback. I don't want anybody questioning that. Let Mark Sanchez play Sunday. He's still on the roster, right? Let him play. Tony Romo should only come into a game in the playoffs if Dak Prescott gets hurt, and then Romo's there. And I expect Tony Romo, if he decides he wants to play football next year, will be somewhere else. Maybe the Denver Broncos, because they need a quarterback. And it worked once before with Peyton Manning. Tony Romo, if Denver's got a decent offensive line, they're healthy, they've got good receivers. I think Tony Romo's a good quarterback, but he never did what Dak Prescott's done. Now, Dallas Cowboys have had a long and storied tradition. And many good quarterbacks, Roger Staubach, Troy Aikman, Danny White, Tony Romo. None of them ever won 11 games in a row. None of them. Zero. Zero. Dak Prescott did. And you could say, well, he's got this great line, and he's got Ezekiel Elliott. And hey, they didn't have Zeke last year, but they had the great line last year, and Darren McFadden's no slouch, and they stunk when Tony Romo got hurt. They stunk on toast when Tony Romo got hurt. So you have to give him credit. You can't just say, well, it's this, that. Dak Prescott's getting it done. And he surprised a lot of people. I didn't think he'd be this good. I didn't think he had an NFL career ahead of him. By the way, they went 42-21 last night. And a couple of things I got out of that game. Number one, Dallas' defense, and I knew this already, is not very good. So I'm concerned if I'm a Cowboys fan if the Packers or the Falcons come to town. The Giants have already beaten them twice. You know, any of these teams are going to have to play at least one of these teams to get to the Super Bowl. But I don't trust that defense. The good news is I don't know if anybody can trust it, can stop that offense if they're playing well. They put up 42 in a game they really didn't care about. Think about that. Zeke Elliott sat after they took the lead, took a big lead. He only had 80 yards rushing on 12 carries. He had a 55-yard touchdown run. Scored two touchdowns.
I'm surprised that Dez Bryant is buying in because, you know, normally, you know, superstar wide receiver, running back or whatever, they want their ball, you know, they want the ball. They want their touches. But, I mean, in this situation, you have to understand, listen, we have something going on here. Just play within the system. Let Dak is going to throw it to you if you're open. I mean, he took some chances to Dez yesterday, but you see, when you don't force it, you know, to that star guy, you know, you have a better chance to be successful.
You know, early in the season, he wasn't getting the ball to Dez, and I don't think Dez was happy. And no. Then Dez got hurt. And right. So when Dez got back, it seems like they made a concerted effort to get the ball to Dez Bryant to try to keep him happy because Dez Bryant's touches, his catches, his season has changed since he came back from that injury. But you're right, especially early on in the season, I don't know if Dez Bryant was buying in because he wasn't getting the football, and he wants the football. At this point now, they're 13-2. I think he's buying in because he thinks he can win a championship. You know, these prima donna wide receivers, they want the ball all the time, but they also want to win. And this is not an opportunity that comes along every year in Dallas. You know, last year was a dark year for the Cowboys. They were awful. Tony Romo got hurt. He came back. He got hurt again. Dez Bryant got hurt. Came back. Not a great year. Came into camp in shape, and then Tony Romo gets hurt. He gets hit in the Seattle preseason game, and he's done. So you have to think, oh, here we go again if you're Dez Bryant. Because remember what happened last year. Last year, he gets hurt, the season goes off the rails. He's hurt again. You have to assume. I don't care what – and I don't know about you, Chris, but even though Dak Prescott looked good in preseason, it's preseason.
Yeah, it's still preseason.
My thought was, well, wait till teams actually play defense against him or have a book on him or get, you know, are prepared to play Dak Prescott. This will change. And it hasn't really. Say for 2 weeks he slowed down a little bit. And then he's made an adjustment. Now he doesn't put up ridiculous numbers, but he seems to always make the right play. He seems to be smart. And you have to give him a lot of credit for that. I did not expect Dak Prescott to have an NFL career, more or less, much less be this good. You know, Dak Prescott might be the MVP of the league. I think if I'm giving an MVP, I'd give it to that offensive line, but they won't do that. If you had to pick an MVP right now, Chris, who's the MVP of the league?
I mean, it's tough. I might say Zeke Elliott. I mean, but most people going to say Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think Brady's a good choice, even though he missed four games. I will tell you, I don't like the Patriots at all. I respect Tom Brady. I think he's arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. I don't like Belichick, but he's arguably the greatest coach of all time. There's something about the idea of Roger Goodell having to hand them that trophy that it's like a perverse thrill for me. And even though I don't want to see the Patriots win, I want to see that. You know, after the worst scandal in the stupidest scandal in the history of sports, which is still no proof that anything happened. It's an equipment violation at best, so it should have been like a $10,000 fine. And instead, it was $1 million and two lost draft picks and a four-game suspension to the face of the league. And if they come back and they win the Super Bowl as a giant FU to the league, and he has to hand that trophy, and Tom Brady wins the MVP, and you have to hand that trophy to him and the Lombardi trophy to Belichick, part of me finds that fantastic. You know, this anger tour that the Patriots have gone on. And I'll tell you this. I thought a few weeks ago when Gronk got hurt, I thought they were vulnerable. Thought he's the best. He's uncoverable. And to me, a healthy Gronk's the greatest tight end this league's ever seen. And now they lose him. Their receivers are pretty nondescript. Their running game's okay. They don't have playmakers on defense. And what have they done since Gronk got hurt? It looks like they got better. How's that possible? But that's Belichick. They're prepared. They're prepared. And I'm very curious to see how the postseason goes. Because with three quarterbacks that are backups starting for teams in the AFC in the postseason, if the Raiders hold on to the two seed, which is going to be, it's going to be Steelers at Patriots in the AFC title game, and I don't know if the Steelers can get that done. Should be fun, though. You're listening to SB Nation Radio.
SB Nation AM continues now on SB Nation Radio. Sitting in on SB Nation AM, here's Ken Weinman.
It's sort of in the background right now, but college basketball season is here. They've been playing basketball, college basketball, for a little while now, and of course we'll focus on that more once the football season ends in both college and pro. Let's bring in Patrick Stevens, who joins us on the Progressive Insurance guest line, talk some basketball. And Patrick, good morning. Thanks for joining us here on SB Nation Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Hey, Patrick, before we get started talking hoops, I noticed, and maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I saw you tweet about the bowl game yesterday, the Quick Line bowl game, Maryland and Boston College, which had one of the oddest sequences I've ever seen. It seemed like Maryland had about 700 plays inside the 20, but didn't score, and penalties. And that, I guess it's entertaining football, but that was an ugly football game.
Yeah, well, when you put two teams that are 6-6 together that weren't all that great to begin with, and then we're coming off bad seasons last year. So they're both, I think, 3-9 a year ago. So you're talking about teams that are kind of trying to climb their way back into relevance, and that's frankly the sort of game that you probably could expect to get. You know, Boston College actually showed more on offense than they had for much of the season yesterday, and Maryland had started the year 4-0 before dropping 6 of their last 8 heading in. So for that to turn out to be a little bit of a mess really doesn't come off as a huge surprise. That having been said, that sequence where Maryland had a drive that went 9 plays for 15 yards and used 5 minutes of clock was something I'm not sure I've ever seen.
And the other thing was, what's Boston College doing accepting a holding penalty on third down when they could have just let him kick the field goal? And then they get the face mask, of course, on the next play, which gives Maryland a first down again. It's just a lot of stuff happening there. We're talking to Patrick Stevens, covers college basketball. And let's get into hoops. Villanova, the national champ from last year, sitting undefeated. I guess that's not a surprise. What has surprised you so far this season?
Well, I'm frankly surprised that Baylor's turned out to be as good as they've been. And I think that if we're stacking up resumes, I don't think it's a stretch to say that Baylor has the best set of victories out of anybody at this point. And I think some of those have been tarnished a little bit here, like their Michigan State victory. But I mean, to beat Louisville, to beat Xavier, to beat Oregon, to beat BCU, to beat Michigan State, I think Baylor being this good qualifies as a bit of a surprise. I expected UCLA to be better. I didn't think they'd be quite this good. There's certainly teams like Michigan State where it's a little surprising that they haven't turned out to be all that great. Connecticut, obviously, one of the unluckier teams out there. I think they belong on the other end of things at this point. And I would also kind of point out, there's teams like Texas that are 6-5 that you kind of thought might be a little bit better, but you know, the reality is you look at the teams near the top right now, and there are a lot of familiar names between Villanova, Kansas, Duke, Louisville, Kentucky, North Carolina, all these teams crammed into the top 10, top 15, you know, Wisconsin, Purdue, Indiana, not too far from there. It looks like this could be a real year for the blue bloods of the sport, and non-conference play has suggested that will be the case.
Talking to Patrick Stevens, writes about college basketball. You mentioned UCLA, and we talk all the time about the recruits that go to Kentucky and go to Duke. But how good is this kid Lonzo Ball?
He has made a major impact on that team. I don't think there's any question that anyone who watched UCLA win at Kentucky, win the Wooden Legacy Tournament back Thanksgiving weekend, really run Michigan off the floor in the second half of their game earlier this month. I mean, we can keep going down the list, but he's a guy that has really helped transform UCLA from being irrelevant last year. I mean, that's a team with a losing record a season ago to this is incredible. And I think it's fair to say that UCLA fans should enjoy the next 2.5 to 3 months as much as they possibly can, because they probably will not see him back in Westwood next year. But there's a very real chance that he's going to be good enough to help them make a deep, deep run. Maybe their deepest run since those three straight Final Four trips in 06, 07, 08, when March rolls around.
Patrick, who are a couple teams that aren't sitting like right there in the top 5 right now that you think are primed for a deep run once we get to March?
Well, I think if Purdue can get enough backcourt play, which is the great question with the Boilermakers, they might have one of the top two or three big men in the country in Caleb Swanigan, and top three might be selling him a little bit short. He has been fantastic so far this season. And if Purdue can get just enough guard play, I think it's a team that has a chance to do some damage. I think we've kind of forgotten a little bit about Oregon in the early part of the season, and I don't know if they'll quite get to the level that a lot of people expected of them. But I do think that as they get healthier, that's a team that has a chance to make things interesting as well. And then, you know, I would point out a team like Gonzaga, which nobody seems, I know they're in the top 10, but a team people tend to kind of just take for granted that they're going to be a Sweet 16 type of team, and that's it. I think that this might be as good a team as Mark Few's had, and that might be a team that has a chance to go deep into March as well.
Patrick, do you buy into Creighton? I think they play Villanova this weekend. Do you buy into them?
Yes. I really, really like that backcourt a lot with Marcus Foster and Maurice Watson Jr., a pair of transfers, team that hasn't lost yet, and a team that frankly hasn't played. Now, granted, they beat Wisconsin. I shouldn't say they haven't played anybody. They beat Wisconsin. But their other two really high-end victories are neutral site defeats of Mississippi and NC State. I think offensively that Creighton is a fabulous team, and I think that they're going to be one of the top two or three teams in the Big East. Definitely curious to see how they stack up against Villanova. I think that'll be a great early bellwether game in the Big East for both teams. But I suspect that you'll see Creighton as a team that can at least make the second weekend of the tournament. The question is, do they run into somebody that can contain that backboard? If they do, then they're going to have to play a fair bit of defense to be able to make an extended run beyond simply making it to the second weekend. But I do think Creighton overall looks very, very good right now, and will be a contender in the Big East this season.
Talking college basketball with Patrick Stevens. Patrick, Duke's obviously very good. They only have one loss. Their two freshmen are making their way back, and they're both supposedly great. They have an issue with Grayson Allen. Do you like the way Coach K has handled this indefinite suspension? And it seems like he just can't stop tripping people.
Yeah, Grayson Allen, guy that, you know, this is his third encounter with a tripping incident in this calendar year, and so it's reasonable to say that the suspension is more than warranted at this point. Now, how long it lasts, it depends on how cynical you are. Duke opens conference play against Virginia Tech, and then Georgia Tech, then Boston College, then Florida State, and then Louisville. So I suspect indefinite means three or four games, but we'll see on that point. I think for Duke, the interesting thing is they have all these pieces, and this was these last two games coming out of their exam break was the first time that they had all those guys playing together, basically. And so, you know, Harry Giles, the freshman, wasn't quite himself, was playing at limited minutes, and now Grayson Allen is out for however long he's out. I always thought that Duke was going to have kind of an acclimation period at some point when they got all the pieces together and things might be a little disjointed. And in some ways it was good for them that was starting to happen for those two games against Tennessee State and Elon, which are both very good teams, but also not on par with what they're going to see at the top of the ACC as well. So the Allen suspension sort of delays that adjustment period a little bit further down the road. And I expect them to have a rough week at some point, just a rough week and a half, 2 weeks, whatever, as they figure out what roles everyone's going to fill. So in a lot of ways, you know, you look at the individual conduct and you have a lot of hand-wringing over Grayson Allen on a national level. But I think that for the actual team, that his conduct probably delays that inevitable sputtering as they kind of, you know, establish some continuity. I think that delays it a little bit further down the road, and I don't think that helps them one bit. So I'm curious to see what sort of player Allen is when he gets back after this suspension. And I'm also curious to see if Duke ultimately does go through the sort of just, I don't even want to say
we got to cut it there, Patrick. Patrick Stevens covers college basketball. You can find him on Twitter at D1S Course. You're listening to SB Nation Radio.
SB Nation AM continues now on SB Nation Radio. Sitting in on SB Nation AM, here's Ken Weinman.
Well, something I wanted to get to, and we got caught up in some other things, including my shock that Chris Taylor had to pay for food when he lived off campus as a scholarship athlete in Indiana. That to me is incredible. Because they get a cut of the Big Ten pie. Indiana's never been a powerhouse football team, but they get a cut of that Big Ten pie.
Yeah, they're getting something.
They're getting a lot. That Big Ten network's making a lot of money, and Indiana gets a share of that. And oh, by the way, they carry their weight in basketball, so don't cry for Indiana. I like the Northwestern or anything like that. I didn't mean to criticize Northwestern.
No, you did.
Anyhow.
You did.
Anyhow. They've never been in the NCAA basketball tournament, and they go to bowl games periodically. But anyhow, I wanted to get to this this touchdown the Cowboys scored last night. Dez Bryant threw the ball to Jason Witten for a touchdown. There was 4 minutes left to go in the third quarter. They gave them a 14-point lead, 35-21. I'm just curious, and this is a great play because you don't realize Dez Bryant's left-handed. And he was running the ball in the reverse, and he's running to his right, so his left hand is his free hand, and he's got Jason Witten wide open. If he's running that way and you assume he's right-handed, he can't throw the ball. But he's left-handed. But why show that play in a meaningless game? The Cowboys have locked up the one seed. They're going to beat the Lions last night anyway. That play put the game away, but winning that game was not important. They're going to be the one seed. Why show that play in a game that means nothing?
Because again, setting up something else. They might be setting up another play. I don't know.
What else are they setting up?
I don't know. I mean, maybe they wanted to put it on film so they can do something else.
Think about this. If you run a reverse, first of all, Dez Bryant's not exactly considered a fast guy. So when they gave him the ball in a reverse, I was a little surprised. You know, it's not a guy. He's not running a 4.240. But I didn't expect him to throw the football. And he actually sold it very well. If you watch the play, when he first starts running, I don't think he's going to throw the ball. And then he just stops and Jason Witten's wide open. He throws. And I think part of it is, as a defender, he's a wide receiver. You don't realize he's left-handed. So when he's running, the thought of him throwing the ball that way is not in your head, but now it's in your head. I think the team sometimes revel so much in being cute that they sort of they bite off their nose to spite their face. Now, I'm trying to use as many cliches as possible here. But I just think that was a great play, but it would have been even better in a playoff game when you're able to, say, get the Green Bay Packers completely out of sorts because they're not expecting Dez Bryant to throw the football. Does that make sense? I just think that play should have been saved. I never thought about a play where Dez Bryant's going to throw the football, and it worked because you don't expect him to be left-handed. Because I don't know how teams game plan, but I don't think they're ever thinking, well, Dez Bryant, if he runs a reverse, he's left-handed, he can throw the ball there. I think when you saw him running and the way he sold it, you assumed he's running in reverse, and you're going, well, why are the Cowboys running a reverse with Dez Bryant? They've got faster guys. You'd rather run the reverse with Cole Beasley, right?
Right.
He's kind of that quick twitch guy.
Lucky Whitehead or something like that. But.
Yeah, Lucky Whitehead. Great name, by the way.
Right.
Lucky Whitehead, Cole Beasley, anybody but Dez. He's probably the slowest receiver they have, right? Right.
And when I first heard the name Lucky Whitehead, I was surprised that he was a brother, to be honest with you. I mean, it shocked me.
One of those guys you just don't expect, right?
Right. Then a brother with dreads. I'm like, okay, Lucky.
Yeah.
Whitehead.
You go,
yeah.
Lucky Whitehead. Yeah, that's actually a good one. Yeah, I didn't think about that, but you're right. Yeah, Lucky Whitehead sounds like somebody went to Harvard.
You would think
this
so?
Is Lucky Whitehead. Yeah, this is Lucky Whitehead. He's a legacy.
Oh, man, that's funny.
But I just think the Cowboys they got a little too cute for their own good. I would have saved that play. I would have saved that play for the playoffs because if you run that play right, you would have caught whoever you. The first time you ran that play, if you sold it like he sold it last night, it's going to work. It's going to work because you're not expecting him to be left-handed. And now teams have it on film.
And I don't like all the cuteness, you know, on the goal line in the red zone. I don't know why they want to get so creative down there for some reason. And don't get me wrong, it's tough because you don't have a lot of field
to operate. But sometimes I just like old school smash mouth football when you get down in there. Just run it in there.
Well, let's not get it twisted. What the Chiefs did Sunday night was an FU to the Broncos. Some reason, Andy Reid and Brad Childress, there's something that rubs them the wrong way about the Broncos. That was a big middle finger to the Broncos, having Don Terry Poe throw that football. What were they up, 21 at that point?
Yeah.
In the fourth quarter. They're not losing that football game. And they just wanted to stick it to the Broncos. So something got under Andy Reid or Brad Childress got under their craw, and they wanted to say, here's a little medicine for you. And that's what that was all about. Because, first of all, I don't want to get Agib Tlaib mad ever. Agib Tlaib, I want him to be even keeled as possible. That when they play them next year, he's going to have a long memory about that. Somebody's going to get hurt. And if he threatens to meet you outside, decline. He likes to carry weapons.
Right, he likes to carry weapons. He likes to fight a little bit.
Yeah, well, he scraps, but he also has firearms. Guys that scrap with firearms kind of scare me. The Cowboys won 42-21 last night. They've already clinched the number one seed in the NFC. We'll talk more about this as the week goes because we're getting ready for Week 17. And the Cowboys, obviously, they play the Eagles. I've already said if I'm the Dallas Cowboys, I'm playing Mark Sanchez next week. I don't want Romo in there. Romo causes too much damn drama. If you put Romo in there, he should only be sitting there. Get him his work during practice. Make sure he can throw the football. But I am of the mind that anytime Tony Romo comes into a football game at this point, it's something that could have a negative effect on Dak Prescott. And Dak Prescott's the guy that's gotten you to 13-2. And I don't want anything having a negative effect on Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott has been one of the refreshing stories of this NFL season. And if the Cowboys are going to win a Super Bowl, it's going to be with that guy behind center. I want to thank Chris Taylor, always making me sound kind of smart. We'll talk to you tomorrow as I'm in for the SB AM guys all week here on SB Nation Radio.